University Covenant Church, it's so good to be back. We had just some stellar speakers, Theron and Susan, and that allowed me to be away for a week and be out of town this past weekend. We celebrated two birthdays in my family, my daughter and my mother, this weekend. I was out of town, coming back, had a great time, and super glad to be back with you guys. Hey, before we get into God's word today, and just if you want to skip ahead, we'll be at Romans chapter 12. We'll be starting with verse 3. But before we get into that, I want to just give a few church updates that are really exciting. We've had a lot of staff transition these last several months, and we realize we really haven't done a great job communicating that to all of you. So, as you know, Pastor Schumann Sen became a lead pastor of another church several months ago. And since then, we just have had some stellar people, and I really mean the stellar people, rise up and do an amazing job with pastoral care, adult ministry. And so I just want to highlight some of those and have you welcome some of those people with me. The first group I'm going to start with is a volunteer team. It's our care team. And they meet about once a month, but they're doing a lot in between to just kind of steward our church and make sure our church is feeling well cared for. I just want to thank all the members of that team. They have been doing a stellar, stellar job. With that, our own Susan Cosio has stepped in this season part-time to really help out with pastoral care, and her deepest heart is not only care, but spiritual formation and helping people develop into who God meant them to be and training others to provide that kind of care. Susan, we're so glad to have you on board, and we want to thank you. Susan's role is an interim role. We do hope to hire a full-time adult pastor at some point. And Susan's role, as well as this next person jumping in, they just have stepped in and said, hey, we're here to serve as long as it makes sense. The second person I want to mention is Rachel Speedy. Many of you have seen Rachel. She's up front in the Welcome Center as you guys walk in. She just has a heart to making sure really three things. One is that all newcomers get connected to our church. They feel welcomed and they know the next steps to plug in to becoming part of this family. Also, she has a heart for when we have new believers, people who've either raised their hands or people we hear of who have made a transition and received God's grace through Jesus' death and resurrection in their life, what to do, how to follow up and disciple them. That's her passion too. That's the second area she's working on. And the third is she has a deep heart for evangelism, and particularly how is our church engaged in our local community. That area she's going to be experimenting with for our church, but we're glad to have Rachel on board, and we are calling her the director of church engagement. And Susan's title is Pastor of Spiritual Formation. And we have another person who's come on board. Many of you have already seen him. His name is Matt Johnson. Matt is better known as Tiffany Kalovic's fiance, as he jokes. He plays drums. He's multi-talented. But he is coming in to take over all of our video and media. So he is filming me right now. He's standing right there. But he does a lot of our video and media as well. And he's doing a stellar job. We're so grateful to have him on the team. And we can't wait until he becomes officially legal family member of the team through Tiffany too as well. So those are transitions. And then we have a few more transitions. We've had three amazing custodians, Marilyn Feather, Phil, and Patrick. And due to many circumstances, all three of those are transitioning out. And just our church has now gone through a vendor for custodial services. So we want to thank those three for those years of service. Marilyn and Phil especially have been here for years, and Patrick has just had a spunk of energy. We want to thank you so much, and thank you for your service as well. So that's staffing. Also want you to know our Kids Zone and youth ministries are just doing so well in this season. And because they're doing so well, we need more help. And so I want to ask you if you'd be willing to help. We have anywhere from 75 to 100 kids on a Sunday that we're serving. And it's such a strong program as we invest in our children. And we believe it's core to our strategy. We're a church that believes that we want all people to know Jesus. And so many people make their first decision to be open to Jesus in their lives in their child and youth years. But because our Kids Zone is kind of blossoming right now, we really need more help. So I just have a note from Coralie Cohn, our Kids Zone director. We need check-in volunteers. We need five of those volunteers. We need two helpers to help with Kids Zone in the elementary. And we need some subs as well. And then we have inclusion buddies we need. We need four of those. Inclusion buddies are those who work alongside our kids with special needs. If you would like to explore this, it's usually a commitment of one time every 3 weeks on a Sunday morning. But if you just want to explore this, I just plead with you, if there's anything in you that God says you should check this out, to check this out. We need your help. We're family as we do this. Email Coralie, Corlie@ucov.com, and she will help you understand what's involved and give you an opportunity to check it out to see if God might use you in this vital ministry. Okay, that's all for all the updates. We're going to continue now in Romans chapter 12. Now, I love Romans chapter 12. It's a transition in the book of Romans. At this point, Paul is now saying, in light of everything I've talked about these first 11 chapters, in light of everything, let me talk about what it means for you and me today in our church. Now, remember, to understand what he's about to write, you need to understand and remind yourself of the context. Paul is writing to a divided church, and it's divided along ethnic lines. Now, racial and ethnic division is nothing new to world history. What Paul was disturbed about was that the behaviors of the outside world were seeping into the church life. And God, through Jesus Christ, created a new community called the church that is a countercultural community that stands in opposition to the rest of the community in terms of how we treat and love one another. And Paul's alarmed because that's not what's happening in this Roman church. If you remember, Jesus said this in John chapter 13, a new command I give you. And he's talking to his followers, love one another. Nothing new about that, but then he expands, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. So Jesus now says, look, everything you've received from me, all the grace, all the mercy, all the passion, all the pursuit, all the all that love you've experienced from me, says Jesus, I'm now asking you to demonstrate that same kind of love with one another. And then he makes an amazing statement that we need to remember as we talk about Romans. He says, by this everyone will know that you are my disciples, my followers, if you love one another. He says one of the biggest ways we witness to our world, that we're a blessing to our world, is by how well we model love to one another. That means amidst COVID craziness, political craziness, racial hurt, all those crazy things that are around us, not that all those things don't affect us as a church, but what is different is how well we love one another in the midst of all that. So now Paul is taking all this teaching and says, this is how it applies. And here's what he says in terms of this ethnic division. He says, we actually have a lot more in common than you think. Black, white, Asian, Hispanic, multiracial, Middle Eastern, there is so much that because of our relationship with God is a common factor that we share something in common. He says in Romans 3, there is no difference between Jew and Gentile, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. The first part of this letter of Romans, Paul is just hammering that in. God is righteous, and we're not. And he hammers it. He just says, stop denying your lack of righteousness. Stop denying the sin, and it actually hurts you. And the first part of what we've been reading so far is Paul just hammering in one thing we all have in common, is that we have forsaken God and chosen to worship things other than God and give other things glory and gratitude other than God. And we're all experiencing the consequences of that. Stop denying. But then he transitions, and the rest of this verse says this, and all are justified freely by his grace through the redemption that came by Jesus Christ. He says that when Jesus died and rose again, something fundamentally shifted, and we have faith in Jesus. We actually are receivers. God actually gives us his righteousness, his everything is right. And this is what's crazy, you guys. The book of Romans is often seen and described as the book describing God's forgiveness of humanity. But guess what? The word forgiveness only is mentioned once in the book of Romans. And that one time, it's not even Paul saying it. He's quoting from a verse in the Psalms that happens to have that word. So in terms of Paul's own writing, he never mentions the word forgiveness in this book. The word he mentions over and over again is God's righteousness. See, forgiveness is that you've done something wrong and now you're forgiven from it. Righteousness is like, well, there's nothing to forgive you for. You're righteous in the first place. God gives us his righteousness for anyone who has faith. Black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Middle Eastern, bicultural, multicultural. You don't know what your background is. We have a commonality that all of us are saved by God's grace. So he says there's no boasting here. So what does this mean for our relationship? Pastor Susan read through verses 1 and 2 of Romans chapter 12. Let me just read them. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, in view of everything I've just said, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. And here's where he says this. Do not conform to the pattern of this world. In other words, church, there is a pattern out there. We just have to look outside our windows, look on the news. There is a pattern out there. He says, don't conform to that pattern, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. So the rest of Romans is dedicated to not conforming, but being transformed by God in light of God's mercy by the renewing of our minds, by changing how we think. So now we begin our passage. Chapter 12, verse 3. Verse 3 says this, "For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment, in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you." He says, here's the first implication, brothers and sisters. Have a sober judgment about yourself. I mean, just be real. Don't think too highly, don't think too lowly of yourself either, but have a right-minded judgment. If all of us have sinned and fall short of God's righteousness, and if all of us, through Christ's death and resurrection, the church, have received, put our faith in him and received God's righteousness, there's not a lot of room for bragging here. I can look at you, you can look at me, we can look at one another in the church, and we may have little things that tickle us about talents we have or gifts we have or things we've accomplished. But in the grand cosmic scheme of things, in light of God and his mercy, neither one of us have much to boast about. We kind of got to be a little humble. I'm messed up and forgiven and righteous, and so are you. So we're kind of on the same team here. So Paul's first thing is you've got to have sober judgment about yourself and how you see other people, and not to think of yourself highly or more high above everyone else. And this applies to ethnic relationships as well. We all have an ethnic story. And there's some things that we look at our heritage, I look at my heritage, I'm really grateful about. I really love things. The things about my heritage are kind of embarrassing that I wish weren't part of it. God has forgiven us, and God has given us his righteousness. So we look at each other and we say, hey, we're all on the same team. I'm not going to think too highly about myself. You don't think too highly about yourself, but we're going to look at ourselves with sober judgment. So the question is, well, what does that look like? And Paul says something very interesting that I think is so fundamental to how we relate to one another in the church. He goes on in verse 4. "For just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ, we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others." He says, let's just think about like our bodies. We all have different parts of our bodies, and each of our parts of our bodies belong to one another, and they don't have the same function. I don't want my hand to be a foot. I don't want my foot to be my head, but we all need these different parts, and we form them together. He says, you guys, the church is the same way. And then he says this, Jew, Gentile, or if you're speaking to our church, Black, white, Asian, you name it, white, Middle Eastern. I always have to throw in Middle Eastern. He says, guess what? We all belong to each other in the church. We actually belong to each other. You belong to me, and I belong to you. And let me tell you what that means. That means when you suffer, I suffer too. And let's just switch it to race and ethnicity for a moment, because this is the context Paul's writing into. That if something is happening that affects your people group, that affects me too. And I would hope if something happens to my people group, that would affect you. And my white brothers and sisters, the same is true. If something is happening to your people group, we mourn with you, and vice versa. One of the things that's so different about the church in our society and racial relationships is often the white ethnicity, particularly the white male, is demonized in these conversations. I say, that's not the church. That's anti-church. We belong to one another. Your story is my story, and my story is your story. And we're members of the same body. And the fact that Paul is writing this to Jews and Gentiles, and he says, especially the Gentiles in this situation, we belong to one another. You're full members. The healing that must have given them. And church is the same for us, that we look out for one another, and our stories affect one another. This is the countercultural movement of the church. And what's great is he takes us to another level. He's going to talk about what are sometimes called spiritual gifts. The idea of spiritual gifts is new to you. What that means is when you give your life to Jesus, you put your faith in him, he gives you some spiritual gifts. Now, these are, you already have some natural abilities. You might even have some gifts. Spiritual gifts are slightly different in the way you do them actually have like a holy impact. It's very hard to explain, but they have a spiritual impact. And he says it's the same thing with that God has distributed spiritual gifts among us that are very diverse, and we need each other. Verse 6, we have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. These three verses have great insights that I want to share. The first is this, is that Paul is saying, hey, God has given you a gifting. You're a member of this crazy thing called the church. He says, lean into your gifting and use it. Sometimes we're ashamed of using what God has given us, or we feel like, well, it's not this person's gift, or my gift is not so needed. He lists a variety of gifts. Some are very public, some are very private. That's not the point. The point is God is saying, you have a gift, lean into it. And church, one of the ways we can help each other is to encourage each other in our giftings. There's online spiritual gift assessments, and those are helpful. But I would say the thing that has been most helpful to me and I've seen helpful for others is when people have given me feedback and said, you know, John, when you do this in the church, man, God uses that. It's the feedback that goes back and forth. So church, I want us to encourage one another. When you see someone else functioning and serving in a way that kind of has a spiritual impact, will you just point it out to them and let them know, hey, when you do this, I don't know if you know this, but this happens. Most of us are pretty self-unaware, and it takes the feedback of other people to go, oh, I didn't know that about myself. One of my gifts is teaching. And I remember the first time I taught, it was, I think I was in college. After I preached, I sat down and I thought to myself, that was the worst message ever. I cannot wait to leave this room and hide myself in my room for 3 weeks. And as I was thinking this, people came up to me and shared the spiritual impact that God was using in their lives from what I shared. I would have had no idea unless they shared that. I love telling people, you know, I see this in you. When you do this, God's mission moves forward. So Paul's saying, hey, one way we're family and we belong to each other and we don't think too highly of ourselves is A, we live into the gifts that God has given us, but also we encourage one another as Paul is doing here. Hey, if you lead, do it. If you serve, please do it. If you give, please do it. He's encouraging and pointing out the need for different people to function in their areas of gifting. That's the first thing. The two other things I want to say are warnings. Things I see happen in the church over and over again, and I see happen in our church as well, that I think we have to watch out for as we pursue this sense of we're all different members belonging to the same body. The first warning I want to give us, church, is what I call gift projection. This is when you are gifted in a particular area and so passionate about it that you look at everyone else and wonder why they're not doing the same thing. They are not as passionate, and you begin to judge them. Some of you are really gifted with generosity. Not only do you know how to make money, but you love giving money away. Now, God calls all of us to live lives of generosity. This is not just for people who are gifted in generosity. But there are certain of you that this is actually a spiritual gift, that you think of creative ways to make money and give money away for his purposes. And there are times where I'm just picking on generosity people, where you look at other people who aren't as generous and you think, why isn't everyone doing this? Some of you have gifts of mercy. You just have compassion on people. You see the hurting, you see the needy, and you just have compassion on them. And all of us are called to have mercy. That's something all of us God asks us to do. But some of you are really gifted, and you will look at other people who are not as gifted as you and begin to think, why aren't you as gifted as me? And you begin to project your gift on other people and not let them do what God has gifted them to do. Again, I'm not saying that we're not all gifted or we're not all called to certain things as followers of Jesus. What I am saying is some of you have extraordinary gifting from God in these areas, and your temptation will be to critique other people who don't have the same gift. You could do this with the leadership gift. You wonder, why aren't all people leaders? Name anything that you're super passionate about, and it's very easy to take that passion, which God has given you and given you giftings for and given you a place in the body to serve, but to begin to look at everyone else and saying, well, why don't you have those same passions and giftings? That actually causes harm. Paul's remedy, if you have this gift, do it well. But don't make your gift the gift that everyone needs to have. Do we all have to have a baseline of behaviors and values that God has given us? Absolutely. But be careful not to take your extra gifting that God has given, your extra passion, and criticizing others that don't have it. It could be, you name any good area, prayer, love for kids, love for youth, love for adults, love for discipleship, missionary, where you name it. All those are needed in the body, but some of you are going to have more passion and gifting. I plead with you, as Paul does, do what God has gifted you to do. We need you. And I want to ask you, be careful not to project your gift on others and wonder why they don't have the same thing. We're not all called to be the same member. That's the first warning. Here's the second warning that's very related to this. It's called ministry projection. It's very related to what I just talked about. Ministry projection is where you're passionate about a particular ministry and you wonder why everyone else isn't as passionate and you critique the church because everyone should be focused on this particular ministry. Now, I joked about this when I first got here and it's still somewhat true in our church, although not as much, but I think it's important to bring up. When I first got here, part of what I wanted to do to get to know our church is I met with various ministry leaders in our church. You know, things from like our preschool to global outreach to prayer to small groups to children and youth to marriage ministry to social justice ministries. And it was so good to hear. And I was just amazed at all the different things God was doing in our church. But I was also disturbed to hear a common theme from almost every ministry leader. And it was said in different words, but it kind of went like this. You know, our ministry is the best thing going in this church, and we really wish the rest of the church would clue into that and give more of their attention to our ministry. Now, on one hand, it's kind of funny because I kind of think, well, if all of you feel that way, maybe you should all duke it out and figure out who's really telling the truth here. The other thing I loved about this, it was just a lot of people who were passionate about what they were into. And man, I would rather have passionate people than people who had no passion. There's that phrase, it's much easier to tame a wild horse than it is to raise one from the dead. So I'd rather passionate people in our church than people who have no passion. So I was thrilled. But the disturbing thing was this thing of, our church should be more like us. In other words, yeah, Jesus says all these things about various members of the body, but really every member should be like us and give us more attention. What happens in a church like that is it's siloed. It says our ministry is important and the others aren't as important or aren't as necessary. And what's hard about this is it always starts with a good thing. It starts with passion. It starts with something that God has given. But it can go south when you begin to think everyone should be as passionate about what we do as I am. And this could be about all kinds of good things, evangelism, global missions, generosity missions, children and youth ministries, life groups. You just name it. All these, you can make an argument why it should be the center of every ministry. But what Paul is saying here is that we're various members of the same body. None of us have a ministry that's center. The only person that's center is Jesus Christ himself, and it's his body, and we live into his body. So Paul is saying, like, look, we all have gifts. Do your gifting. But he also says, those who do their gifting, focus on their gifting, but don't try to project your gifting or your ministry passion on other people. Rather, be grateful those things exist, but don't try to make everyone the same thing as you. So how does this work out? Because this is really, really tricky. And I can't really go into how all this works out without jumping into next week's passage a little bit. So I'm going to give you a preview of what I'm going to preach on next week. And I want to read Romans chapter 12, verse 10. And we're just going to focus on that verse right now. It says this, be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. What's the solution to this ministry projection and gift projection? It's simply this, you're devoted to one another. You're devoted to other people in love, and you actually honor one another above yourselves. And that implies your gifting, you honor people with other giftings above yourselves, and you honor, no matter what your passions, other people's ministry passions above yourself. I love how different Bible translations take this verse. The New Living says this, take delight in honoring each other. The New Century Version says this, give each other more honor than you want for yourselves. The Message says this, practice playing second fiddle. The NRSV version says this, outdo one another in showing honor. That's my favorite translation. Outdo one another in showing honor. In other words, so he's like, make it a competition and see who's going to win. Outdo one another in showing honor to one another. What does this mean? It means those who are passionate about children and youth, they're spending their time honoring those in other ministries, saying, thank you, I love how you do that. Those involved in global outreach spend time honoring those in other ministries. They talk to our life group ministry and say, thank you for what you're doing. Those who are passionate about life groups look at our prayer ministry and say, thank you for what you're doing. Those who are in prayer ministry look at Feed My Sheep, the food ministry, and says, thank you for what, we're gonna spend more time honoring you than desiring honor for ourselves. Paul says that is how the church is countercultural. We recognize that God has given each of us gifts and passions, and we spend our time in those gifts and passions, developing them, practicing them for the sake of the church. And we spend most of our energy honoring another ministry, another gift set, saying, thank you. I want you to be honored and know how much I appreciate you. So brothers and sisters, we have the chance now to practice something countercultural. We totally do. It's amazing. We have the chance to believe that we can look at ourselves and not think too highly of ourselves, to think of ourselves in sober judgment and recognize we actually belong to one another. We belong to one another. We need each other. I need you and you need me. And we need our other brothers and sisters in the church. And God, through Jesus Christ, has given each of you specific gifts and passions. And I want to plead with you, the church needs you to live into those gifts and passions. We need you. So please be unleashed by God's power and the Holy Spirit's indwellment. Be unleashed to serve other people through the gifts God has given you. Please, please, please. That's how we function. And as you are doing that, spend your bragging energy on another ministry, on another gift set. Outdo one another with honor. Look to think, how can I lift up another ministry or another gift set that's not my own? It's an amazing formula that Paul provides. Live strongly into your passions and gifts and use your words and actions to say thank you and honor other ministries. This is true as well in the whole multi-ethnic conversation that Paul originally wrote the book of Romans for. Jew, Gentile, God has given your culture-specific gifts, live into them, and spend time outdoing one another in honor. We have the opportunity, brothers and sisters, to look at different cultures in our church, all of them, and say, thank you, God, that we are family, that we're in this together, and we're going to spend time belonging to one another, taking each other's burdens and rejoicing with each other and outdoing one another with honor. That's who we are. That's the church. And brothers and sisters, my passion, my prayer for this church is that we would be a church that understands that we belong to one another and spend an incredible amount of time thinking, how can we outdo one another in honor? In fact, I challenge you, church, let's have a competition. Outdo one another with honor. Let's see who wins. God bless you guys.